Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin A.C., Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Jay Posner, sports editor for the Union Tribune. I'm in Denver. Padres about to play the Rockies three games. Jay, the Rockies stink. Padres are on a roll, and I have no idea what it means because Rockies gave them a heck of a time last year, gave them a heck of a time, more importantly, more, you know, germane to our discussion, just last weekend.
You know what, Kevin? That's baseball.
All right. Hey, we're going to see Bud Black today.
That's it. I'm getting you ready for some Bud Black talk. No, I mean, I was just, I looked, did a little bit of quick, very quick research on the Rockies, and they stink, and they've really been bad at home, which seems so rare for a team that, you know, we all think of having a great advantage playing at home. I guess they're, you know, being used to the altitude and the dry weather and the hot weather, all of which you'll have to enjoy this weekend. The Rockies started out the year winning 11 of 16 at home, and since then they've gone 5-14 at home. They've been swept in two series in a row. The Braves swept them 4 in a row. Then the Rockies went on the road, including the trip that took them to San Diego, where they were decent. You know, split the series here, went back home earlier this week and got swept by Cleveland. So, as we know, no figuring any of this. Their last home victory was on June 1st. Three-game series this weekend. The Padres throwing two of the pitchers that the Rockies saw last week. And I guess the same is true for the Rockies against the Padres. Gore goes against Kyle Freeland tonight. That was a mismatch for the Rockies the first time around. Gore had his first bad start, as we've talked about. And I think tomorrow is Herman Marquez, who pitched well also for the Rockies, as he usually does against the Padres. And Nick Martinez, who pitched well, I thought, for the Padres in that game. This was part of the stretch where the Padres scored two runs in three straight games, managed to win one of them. But, man, they sure broke out against those Cubs. Talk about bad teams. Wow.
I will say this, that there was no denying in the Padres clubhouse. I couldn't help myself as I was, you know, you go around and you're talking to a team that's hitting well. I couldn't help myself but say, man, too bad you can't face the Cubs pitching all season. And there was no denying that fact. That would be silly. What I'll say about the Rockies is it's not just against the Padres. Let me just say this right now. The Padres should come in here and win this series and finish a very good road trip. I don't care who's starting. This is not a good team, and it's obviously a bad bullpen because Kyle Freeland has been pitching well for a week or so. Herman Marquez has been pitching well for a week or so. And Antonio Sensatella, who faces Blake Snell on Sunday, is coming off two quality starts. So obviously there's problems at the back end for the Rockies, and that's very much the situation. Of course, there's problems at the front end too with the Cubs, but there's problems at the back end in the bullpen with the Cubs. And the Padres are on a roll right now. They are, just as they said, their offense is heating up, and you come in here, and I don't care if it's here or anywhere else, you do what you do. You take care of the bullpen and the weaker pitchers, and you score a lot of runs.
And I don't think, I mean, their bullpen at the back, I mean, Daniel Bard's been pretty good, and there's someone else back there whose name I can't recall right now. So it doesn't seem to be quite as bad, but they certainly have had their issues, and you're right. I mean, this is a time where the Padres should take advantage of that. I mean, the Rockies, it's funny, they got off to a good start. They're 16-11, and since then they're 11-26. And as we know, two of those wins came last weekend. So you never know what's going to happen, and obviously playing games at Coors only adds to the uncertainty. The Padres are, you know, will not be throwing Darvish or Musgrove in this series. So there's always that question. I don't think Nick Martinez, I think he's only pitched once at Coors. It was several years ago. Gore obviously has never pitched there. Blake Snell, we know about his road pitching issues. So, you know, I would say nothing would surprise me this weekend. I guess if the Rockies swept the Padres, that would surprise me. But anything short of that, any other outcome would not surprise me. And, you know, look, the Padres, as you pointed out in your newsletter, I can't remember if it was today or yesterday, it figured that all these guys were going to start hitting pretty soon because you just figured Trent Grisham wasn't going to hit 150 all year, and Cronenworth wasn't going to hit 200, and, you know, Luke Voit wasn't going to strike out half the time and all that sort of thing. So, of course, they're hot now. Their season numbers, you know, they still don't have anyone above 800. I think Alfaro is just over 800 OPS.
Besides Manny.
Besides, right. And I was going to say, other than the obvious being Machado, who, you know, he slumps. He doesn't get a hit for a couple games, and it's like, oh, it's a big slump. And then he comes back and, you know, it has a couple big games and continues just to hit the ball hard so many times when he's up. And there's a story on our website today from Bryce Miller, and he even points out in there, yes, it's June, but in terms of the MVP race, I mean, Machado figures to be in the thick of it, throughout the season. Yeah, I do think at this point it would be, difficult to outpoll someone like Paul Goldschmidt, who has superior offensive numbers. And if people just look at that, Goldschmidt has a big advantage there. Manny's defense is obviously superior. It's a much tougher position to play. I mean, and it's the same thing with Pete Alonso, who's having a great season. And it's where, you know, WAR comes into play. And I texted you something yesterday about WAR and just how I still, one of these days we're going to get someone on here who's going to kind of, I don't want to say defend it, but sort of explain how it can be so different and why are there different calculations for it. You know, we know what a batting average is. We know what an on-base percentage is. We know how to figure that out. WAR seems to change over a couple different sites. And, you know, Machado has a pretty big edge on FanGraphs right now over Goldschmidt and Mookie Betts and Tommy Edman. And then you go to Baseball Reference, and Tommy Edman, I think, has the highest WAR among players in the National League. So I don't want to get into that too much. It's still only June. There's still almost 100 games to go. But it is a good piece about Manny and a couple of his teammates, Luke Voit, Craig Stammen, talking about him and sort of what makes him so special and what they've picked up from watching him. And those guys have obviously seen a lot of other players as well in their time around the league.
He is, you know, to me, in so many ways, is the epitome of greatness. And certainly he says this a lot, but it's true. And it is that's what the really good players do. Is an 0-for-8 does not become an 0-for-20, mm-hmm. right? It becomes a 3-for-20, which then you were 3-for-12, right? If you were 0-for-8. So that's what he does. And that's why you can be confident that this will continue. And you know what? You can also be confident that, that he can be healthy. And I'll say this, like, when Manny missed a couple games, Paul Goldschmidt overtook him for the games played lead since 2015. Mm-hmm. It was always kind of silly to me that Paul Goldschmidt was even in the conversation, because first baseman shouldn't be in the conversation, right? I mean, it's Manny Machado and Nolan Arenado in terms of your Iron Men. You know, playing every day. That's really right. What it is. I don't know that that's the determining factor for your MVP, unless it's really close. And I will tell you that if it's really close, then it is my determining factor. What position you play. So.
Well, sure. And I think, and obviously you can contribute so much more defensively. And that's why a guy like Edmund has a high WAR as well. You can contribute a lot defensively at a position other than first base. And it's, you know, you're just not getting much credit for defense at first base. And for Goldschmidt to be up there as high as he is tells you what a great season that he's having. But, you also look at Pete Alonso with all the home runs and RBIs that he has.
Where does he play, too?
Well, right. And Goldschmidt, you know, look where Goldschmidt plays. I mean, the best fans in America. So,
well, best fans in America, and certainly, and I love their media there, really do. But their media certainly promotes that. And then the rest of the media buys into it. What Manny will have going for him is the underdog, right? It'll be a big push, and look, I'll be part of it, sure. It'll be a big push of Manny out in San Diego on the West Coast. But look, the Cardinals don't have 6 Gold Glovers. That's not a fact. Actually, they do. I guess that's the fact.
Yeah.
It's become now like this perpetual thing where, look at how great the Cardinals play defense. And they do. But then it's like, so no one else who plays center field can ever win Gold Glove. No one else who plays third base can ever win Gold Glove. Like these things.
You know my feelings about Gold Gloves, and I have two very good examples of why Gold Gloves are a joke, and I don't pay much attention to them. One of them still playing. One of them has a big TV series coming out about him that I can promise you I won't be watching. But the other, the other one I watch play all the time, and it's hard to believe that he won one of them, let alone 4, unless he was a much different much different defensive player then. But that's beside the point. Well, you watch Machado play every day, you know what a great – I mean, the play he made late in yesterday's game was another example of that. I mean, if you didn't see it, he got a bad in-between hop that sort of forced him back onto his heels, and he didn't bother trying to set himself or anything. He basically threw it while he was falling back toward left field, and the throw was right on the money.
Unreal.
To first base, and it was and it's he just makes it look easy all the time. And you know, we probably talk, I don't know if we can talk too much about it, but it's so enjoyable to watch him play. And I do think one more thing on the MVP thing. I think his reputation is going to hurt him. And look, we've seen over the past 3 years or however long he's been here now, is this his fourth year here? I've already lost count. We've seen that the quote narrative about Manny Machado is very unfair. And this is a guy who plays every day and he plays hard. And yeah, he doesn't run out every single ground ball. We've gone through the reasons for that. It's even talked about again in Bryce's column today, you know, his famous quote, "I'm not Johnny Hustle." He doesn't have to be Johnny Hustle. You know, not every player has to be Johnny Hustle. And it's much more important for him to be on the field all the time. But I do think that he does have a problem. His reputation precedes it. And there are some people, it's never going to go away. Now, whether those people have votes for MVP, I don't know. But there are a lot of people out there who hear the name Manny Machado and their immediate reaction is negative. And the thing I'll say is it's unfortunate for them that they don't get to enjoy what they're watching.
It is. And I don't often talk about other media members. I certainly won't name anyone. But in that it is the media that votes for this award, I think it's appropriate that I do. When I tell people how much I enjoy covering Manny, tell the other media members, their reaction is incredulous. They are incredulous. And I don't know that any – well, maybe a couple of them have had, you know, a lot of interaction with him. And he can be a pain in the butt. He really can.
Right.
He made the team I cover better, first of all. So there's number one on my list. Right. Mm-hmm. He makes you work for if you want any sort of quotes or insight, but he gives it to you and he's very good about it. And he made the team I cover better. So there's my reason. My point was, like, people, even if they say they don't, often do allow that narrative, that preconceived notion. That's the problem with a first impression. There's a saying about it is that you never really let it go. That's the problem with it.
No, it is. And there's no reason whatsoever that whether Manny is easy to deal with or hard to deal with or anything like that, none of that should have to do with
MVPs.
But we've heard stories about Ted Williams. I mean, going back to Ted Williams, he was a pain in the butt for writers back in the 40s. And there was no question that there were guys who held it against him. And whether that happens, if it still happens, yeah, it probably does. Whether it's going to hurt Machado in this case, who knows? And again, we have 95 or whatever games to figure out what's going to happen and what his numbers end up being and where the Padres are, which is also very important. And, you know, we should speak more about the Padres at this point, who are 41-24. And I tweeted the link out to this today, and I said this is a first for Hot Lava because we're talking about the Padres being in first place this late in the season, and it's only June 17th, and they have not been in first place this late in the season. And this is such a sad statement to have to make since 2010.
It's sad, but does it surprise anyone who's been following this team?
Probably not, but it's like, my God, that's just so bad. But you know, I guess that's in the past at this point, and they are in first place now. It doesn't mean anything that they're in first place other than they're obviously playing well and they have a really good record, you know, through 65 games. They've never had a better record through 65 games in their history. And, you know, they continue to play at a pace even approaching this, and their win total will be well into the 90s, which is what, you know, what we kind of expected, whether it was, you know, low 90s to mid 90s or whatever. I think the expectation for this team was to win more than 90 games and make the playoffs. Right now, that's the kind of season that they're having. And even though there have been some real hiccups, I guess, in the way, they've overcome those. And I'm not sure what else to you know, it's hard to be too critical when they're 41 and 24.
It is. I think the only thing you can do right now is, I mean, because other than talk about the stuff that we've talked about a lot that hasn't gone well, is talk about what might not go well, right? Like, right. I think they're catching a little bit of a break that evidently MLB has said that Monday you go down to 13 pitchers, right? Now, if things keep going like they are, well, the Padres don't need any more pitchers, but they're not going to keep going like they are. And the good thing is they get to get past their first Coors Field stay with 14 pitchers, right? Mm-hmm. And here's the deal. Mike Clevinger is probably going to join the team here in the next couple of days, pitch next week. You're going to have seven starters, which means you're going to have seven starters. Nick Martinez will be in the bullpen, but you know, that's right. A long guy who goes every once in a while, right? You got Adrian Morejon who goes every once in a while. You've got like five pitchers, five relievers down there that can go on a regular basis after that. So it's going to be really tricky. What they do with their pitching staff with only 13 players.
Well, and I think one of the things to do, and obviously, I mean, I would trust Bob Melvin and Ruben Niebla to manage this is 13 pitchers should be enough.
Absolutely.
You know, and guys should be able to pitch more innings maybe than they do. And the Padres seem to have guys who may be able to do that. Martinez, you know, is one of them. Stammen certainly can. Chris Matt is a guy who can pitch innings. Mm-hmm. I think Tim Hill's the type of guy who normally could pitch 3 out of 4 days. So I think that's the position that they're going to find themselves in, that these guys are just going to have to be used a little bit more often. But there shouldn't be a problem with 13 pitchers.
Not a problem. It's just a different situation that they have to manage. And absolutely. And that's the great thing. You know, Tim Hill's pitched once in the past week. And so now he's, unlike last year, where I don't think he'd had a break of more than 3 days at this point. He's rested. You mentioned Chris Matt, Stammen. That's great. When Nick Martinez goes back, you know, provided Snell keeps pitching and the guys that we assume are going to be their six-man rotation. But what I was saying is that means the starters need to keep going like they're going.
They do. and then you also have guys. I mean, you do have guys like Martinez and Morejon and Chris Matt who can go more innings.
Yep. You just need it to more go like you planned. If it starts to have if you start to have some problems with the starting pitching, then you just have to adjust. But they are in a great position. My question is, now Bob Melvin, he loves having a deep bench, can do all sorts of things. At this point, I mean, is it Brent Rooker? I don't know who this extra position player is. It's not Robinson Cano, unless all you want at this point is your cheerleader in the clubhouse. It's not CJ Abrams. It's not Eggy Rosario because you want him to keep playing, though it's only a matter of time till he's up here. So, it'll just be interesting who that extra person is. To me, it's far more interesting what they do with the pitching. You know, Steven Wilson optioned. Kyle Tyler has pitched really well. You can't option him or you end up losing him. At some point, some team's going to keep Kyle Tyler, who's been been DFA'd five times in the last 2 months, and he showed that he can pitch in Chicago.
Right, and I was going to say you're going to get Will Myers back, but that's going to be so far down the road. And obviously, when you get Tatis back as well, you know you're entering into that area with deciding who stays and who goes. Right now, I mean the outfield is working. You know, Profar is hot. I talked about OPS guys not getting to 800. He's the closest one among the full time guys. I think he's about 785. Been hot lately, and the platoon in right field is working out. I mean, Nomar Mazara looking like the guy that he was early in his career. I mean, I think he started his career with three straight seasons where he hit 20 home runs for the Rangers. And you wrote today about sort of the reunion between him and Profar.
Amazing.
And it is. And these guys were both top prospects and they're both playing. They're
Do you
playing
know who
now
I left
like,
out? And
like
I,
they were.
I should have just mentioned it. And because sometimes you make decisions that just aren't good ones. I figure I write about it later. Jorge Alfaro was one of their top five prospects for a couple of years with those guys.
Wow.
Like it just didn't fit into the story yesterday of those two guys playing together. Alfaro was a little bit behind them, but isn't that AJ? We make fun of AJ Preller, but it's working out right now that he's going to his old Rangers roots.
Yeah, I mean, if guys are gonna, if people are gonna show up and play like that, then sure, it works out. It works out great. Just, you know, as long as he doesn't have any thoughts of, you know, mid-season trades for soft hitting infielders that are due to regress off of a career high batting average, not mentioning any names or anything. Everything seems to be going well. But again, it all goes back to the pitching, and this is a good test this weekend for the pitching, because you have sort of your, depending on where you slot Manaea in this, you pretty much have your four, five, and six guys pitching right now this weekend. I mean, Gore's been great, but I mean, I don't know where you rank. I don't know where you rank him in your rotation, but. And, you know, pitching in an environment that's not great, but the Rockies, you know, their reputation is that they are a great offensive team. This year, they are anything but that. And I think they don't have a lot of power. They hit the ball on the ground a lot. They hit into double plays a lot. I read their hard hit ball rate is very low. So, you know, this is not a team that's done a lot of damage offensively. I didn't check closely to know if Chris Bryant's coming back this weekend. I know he's getting – I think he probably would need a rehab maybe.
Yeah, it's been a while since he played, so I wasn't even on my mind that he would be able to.
So he might need a rehab. And we'll see. I mean, Charlie Blackmon will probably hit a couple home runs just because, you know, he does that. But they don't have a lot of guys really bashing the ball. C.J. Cron, I think, has been their best hitter so far this year. But – as we saw last weekend, they did win two games against the Padres by limiting them to two runs a game for three straight games. But it's interesting. I love what you wrote this week about how you get emails during the games from people complaining about the offense, and then, you know, they end up scoring 12 runs or 19 runs in those games. It's the impatience is hilarious. So we just got a note from one of our guys here, Luke, who said Brian is expected to start a rehab assignment this week. So this weekend. So thank you for
Luke
that.
Costa reporting.
Luke Costa. Yes, with reporting. So, but, you know, anyway, it will be interesting. And the fact that it's going to be hot should only add to the idea, at least, that there should be some offense.
I am. Anybody who covered it remembers it, and if you've covered even a few games here, you have a story. But it was 2019 when the Padres and the Rockies scored more runs in a series than had ever been scored in a series. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, I will say since then, this place has toned down. They've obviously done something. Maybe you've heard about this with the balls.
And apparently with the Rockies hitters too.
Their humidor is on 24/7 here, evidently,
right.
Because it is different. It is different here. It is still a mile high, and you know there is the propensity, but you're not getting the 20 run games. Now watch, I just doomed myself. I'll be here at Coors Field till 2 a.m. this morning. But
actually, the funny thing is that I do think their last. I was looking this up, and if my memory is even close to being accurate, I think their last win on, which was on June 1st at Coors, was like a 13-12 game against the Marlins. So maybe you do have something to look forward to.
Was their last win at home.
At home, yeah, they've lost seven straight since that one. But yeah, the 92 runs in a four-game series.
Jay, I don't have the record here because I generally don't pay attention to these things because they're cyclical. But do you put anything into the Padres' record? What is it, 3-0 on the road? I mean, 3-0 at home and 14-0 on the road? I mean, should I be looking into this? I mean, I generally am like, no, because like last year, I remember they weren't doing well on the road and then it flipped around and it doesn't, but holy smokes.
I don't put a lot of stock in it. I wanted to say they seem to hit better on the road, but their opponents are playing, you know, the opponents playing in the same stadium is the thing. So it's the same conditions. So I just don't know that there's much to get into that. And yet they've had a couple of monster games at home.
That is true.
The opener was big. That game against the a couple games against the Mets where they scored 29 runs in a couple games against the Mets. So or whatever it was. So I you know, who knows?
And, you know, what's been interesting to me is Bob Melvin, and understand Bob Melvin, he loves this game, but he is so enamored with the crowd at Petco because of where he came from, right? Yeah. Like, and he loved, he's a hometown Bay Area guy. But yeah. I think his, and this is just me speculating, this is me listening to him. I think he's somewhat heartbroken by what's happened there and what is happening there. And he's just so enamored with the Petco Park crowd. The amount of times that he, with great passion, says, man, I wish we could have put on a better show for these guys. Like, or that he was happy that they put on a show for the fans, because he truly does appreciate what's happening at Petco Park right now.
Right. And I think, you know, the Padres are averaging, I think it's 36,000, 37,000 fans a game. And they are, depending on what happens and if they continue to play the way they're playing, they actually have a shot at drawing 3 million this year. And Kirk Kenny of our staff reminded me this week that he was at the game in 1974 when he was a kid, and I was there as well. The Padres gave out bumper stickers on a night in September because they passed the 1 million mark in attendance for the first time. That was the year after they almost moved to D.C. And so the fans came streaming out that year and got to a million fans. Used to be a big deal for 81 home games.
What did San Diego Stadium hold back then?
It was in the high 40s, 50, high 40s, maybe okay. even 50 for baseball. Okay. Might have been in the 45 to 50 okay. range, but it didn't matter because it was never full.
Right.
Or just about never full.
It was still open back then. Outfield. Yeah.
Oh yeah. It was open until the 84, I think, something.
I might have been like there that. Too, Jay. I might have been yeah, there you, too, but I was
maybe,
three.
Maybe you were, but you were probably sleeping if you were yelling for cotton candy. Oh no, wait, that was somebody else I won't mention to bring back memories for you. But but no, I do think it's great what's happened there at Petco. And it's interesting. The biggest thing to me are the games during the week, you know, that are drawing 30,000 during the week. I also think the Padres made a very smart decision to start doing promotions during the week. I never understood why they would do their giveaways on Saturdays. You know, they gave out Fernando Tatis hats against the Mets a couple weeks ago on a Wednesday night, and Petco was full. I mean, it's not going to be full on a Wednesday night normally. So
I think Jake Cronenworth bobblehead is midweek next week.
Yeah, this Thursday is Cronenworth bobblehead night. The Philly, you know, I don't know that the Diamondbacks are normally a big draw for those three games, but the Phillies usually are. Be interesting to see. I mean, we did not see as many Met fans
after game one
in that series. Be curious to see. I would think we'd see a lot of Philly fans, though. I mean, it's a four game series, a weekend in the summer. I would think there'd be, and Philly fans usually show up. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that next week. You have a big weekend ahead. I want to wish everyone, starting with you, a happy Father's Day for Sunday. And we will talk on Monday when you're back home about what happened to Coors and what's ahead with the homestand against Arizona and Philadelphia.
Thanks, everybody.